Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, AI developments cause celebration and concern. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
On this week's show, new AI developments in the EU and UK give the music industry cause for celebration and concern, and the commercial radio industry's opposition to BBC Radio's new plans to give music fans more choice. But first, Chris, tell me something that stood out for you in the music world this week.
Well, maybe we should have a very quick chat about a story which isn't really in the music world, but it involves some people from the music world, which I think you're considering to be featured in the And Finally column in the CMU Daily this week.
That's right, I am. It's not an article about the music industry. It's an article about golf, because I've been reading Golf Digest this week.
We could expand the remit of this podcast by covering the golf sector as well as the music sector. We'll get more listeners.
Yes, maybe we could become a golf podcast. I don't know anything about golf.
No, neither do I. But we get away with the music business, don't we? So
we're just about. But I've been reading this article because it is a feature on the manager Irving Azoff and Apple's Eddie Q, who together have opened a golf course, which is nice for them. And but this article, it's a lot of fun for lots of reasons, mainly all of the words in it. They are the things that I've enjoyed the most. One, it's just quite an over-the-top article in general, and they're both quite over the top. So that's fun. I'll just give you, the opening two sentences of the article are incredible. The only thing better than building your own golf course is building one with your best friend. Better still is when money isn't really a concern because you've both won low net and gross in the game of life. That's how it starts. That's how it starts.
These golf journalists, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Give us another couple of your favourite sentences from this story, and then people can either go off and read your write-up in the And Finally column, assuming it's what makes it to the And Finally column this week. I think it probably will. Or indeed, maybe we'll put a link in the set list notes to the full article if people can face the thought of reading the whole thing.
Well, there's a few things. I mean, like I say, I like how the article's written, and I also like how Azoff and Q talk, because they really help with the over-the-topness of the article. So, I mean, there's how Eddie Q describes Irving Azoff, which is, he says, Irving is the super agent because of three things. One, Irving will kill for his clients. Two, he answers his phone 24/7. Three, he's never slipped into the trap of thinking he's the talent. Azoff also talks about golf and the music industry. He says golf's about friendship, but it's also an incredible business tool. So much business, especially in my business, is done on the golf course. Although then the writer of the article notes that at least a portion of this marketing genius's daily work involves giving away free concert tickets to important people. So, I mean, it's just giving away tickets, isn't it? I also want to give a special mention to, I mean, features articles always have to have a bizarre description of the setting for the interview. But this is, I mean, a real classic of the genre, I think. Q, 59, was a standout high school basketball player and still has the appetite of an athlete. Which I think is a way of saying he eats a lot. as well as a powerful voice that would command a locker room. Azoff, a smaller engine thrumming nicely at 75. I think that's another way of saying Q eats a lot. Azoff, a smaller engine thrumming nicely at 75, is having an iced tea with fish and greens, and will softly note that his rock and rollers were always comforted knowing that somebody sober was at the helm. I think that possibly almost also means that Q drinks a lot. I don't know. It all seems a lot of backhanded compliments at Eddie Q.
I assume, but the fish and greens aren't in the iced tea.
Though that would be revolting.
It's kind of weird. I suppose it's because they're trying to stress he doesn't
drink.
It does
say it sound like that's what it's saying.
Well, it's weird to mention the drink before the food, but I guess it's to have a home that he's teetotal, seemingly. Mm. But whatever. So, we've done our golf section on set list. because this article's hilarious. So we will link to Andy's write-up and to the original article. But we should stress, for our regular listeners, Setlist is not becoming a golf podcast. We're actually here to talk about some music business stuff.
Yes, later on, we'll be talking through some more of this week's most interesting music industry stories, including Spotify's 2023 losses, more looming job cuts, and a big new multi-million dollar deal for Joe Rogan. But first, there have been some developments around the regulation of AI in both the European Union and the UK, which, for reasons no one can remember, is not part of the EU. And from the perspective of the music industry, there has been good news and bad news. But what might count as good news, Chris?
Well, as we have discussed loads on this podcast, the music industry is adamant that if any tech company trains a generative AI model with existing music, then that tech company must get permission from whoever owns the copyright in the songs and the recordings that they are using, and they must be fully transparent about the data employed in the training process. So that's what the music industry wants. But of course, many AI companies argue that no permission is required because AI training is covered by a thing called a copyright exception in at least some countries around the world. Or if you're in the US, they would claim that it constitutes as fair use under American copyright law. And it has to be said that the AI companies are not that keen on being fully transparent about what data they're using in the training process either. So for the music industry, good news would be anything from lawmakers, policymakers, government regulators that was basically setting out the copyright and transparency obligations of AI companies, stressing that they have copyright obligations and transparency obligations. So that's what would be good news in the context of AI regulation from a music industry perspective.
All right, yeah, that makes sense. So what do you want to go with first, the good news or the bad news?
I vote let's start with the good news, because then we can end on a down note, which sounds like fun.
How very British of you. All right, then, let's go to the EU, where everything is great and the music industry has welcomed the news that last Friday, member states approved the final draft of the EU AI Act. This is new legislation that seeks to regulate many different uses of artificial intelligence and includes some measures which are relevant to generative AI, which is of most interest to the music industry. Among those heralding the news was John Phelan, the Director General of the International Confederation of Music Publishers, who said that the new legislation provides the protection creators and copyright owners need against the recent wave of AI companies who refuse to observe laws and are illegally acquiring the world's music to train their models. And once in force in Europe, he said, it will have a ripple effect internationally.
Now, there were fears that some elements of the AI Act, including those around transparency, might be watered down at the very final stage of negotiations because certain EU member states were seeking further changes at the very final stage. However, the last holdout, we're looking at you, France, dropped its opposition following some concessions being agreed. So now, basically, the EU member states, through the Council of the EU, have signed off on the final draft, which now needs to be ratified by the European Parliament, although it felt like the European Parliament were pretty fine with the final draft. It was the member states through the EU Council that were causing the problems. So fingers crossed, this AI Act is now pretty much done and dusted. The ICMP specifically welcomed three aspects of the Act, because as we said, it actually covers lots of different elements of artificial intelligence, most of which isn't really relevant to the music industry. But ICMP says, first, with this new legislation, we have clarity that AI companies must observe EU copyright law. Second, AI companies must increase transparency to the music industry as to whether music was used for training models or generative AI output. And third, once generative AI output, such as music or video, hits the EU, obligations will apply to retain detailed documentation on what content was used to train the model, irrespective of where in the world the training took place. So I guess that's an important point, because there will almost certainly be some countries in the world that have very slack regulation of AI when it comes to copyright and transparency. So what copyright owners have been hoping is, as the EU has done with the transparency rules, they will say, we don't care what the rules were where you trained your model. The minute you start exploiting that model in the EU, you will have to comply with the EU rules.
Now, speaking for the record companies, the IFPI said that last week's approval of the AI Act marks an important step forward in helping to protect creators in the AI environment. AI offers creators both opportunities and risks, and we believe there is a path to a mutually successful outcome for both the creative and technology communities. Success requires guardrails, public policies that enable and require responsible AI. We urge the European Parliament to approve this first-of-its-kind legislation without delay.
So that's what's been happening in the European Union. Let's get back to the UK now, where the Intellectual Property Office has shelved its planned code of practice on copyright and AI. So this wasn't going to be new laws, but the hope was that the copyright industries, creative industries, including the music industry, could get together with the tech companies and the AI companies, and a voluntary code of practice could be agreed around copyright and AI. It was announced in March last year that this was the plan. Then in June last year, the IPO confirmed that it had convened this committee of representatives for copyright owners and the AI sector. So for example, from the music industry, you had organizations like UK Music, BPI, Music Publishers Association, Council of Music Makers were represented. On the tech side, you had companies like IBM and Google DeepMind and Stability AI. And so that all began last summer. And we were originally told that this code of practice would be published before the end of 2023. We suspected that they really wanted it in place. Do you remember Rishi Sunak did that AI summit at Bletchley Park? He interviewed, was that where he interviewed Elon Musk? Was that at that?
I think so, yeah.
And we assumed the plan was that this code of practice would be in place so that Rishi could hold it up at his little AI summit and say, look, we've done this. But no, it didn't happen. It wasn't published by the end of the year. And yeah, now it's not happening.
Yeah, plans to develop the code followed the UK government's decision to abandon a new copyright exception for data mining that would have benefited AI companies. And the code, the IPO said back then, would aim to make licenses for data mining more available and would help to overcome barriers that AI firms and users currently face and ensure that there would be protections for rights holders. The music industry hoped the code would clearly set out those copyright and transparency obligations, but it now turns out the code won't be setting out anything clearly because it's not going to exist. This week, following a report in the Financial Times, the IPO confirmed that it has shelved the plans for that code of practice on copyright and AI after failing to negotiate an agreement between the creative industries and key AI companies.
This was all actually confirmed in a report that was published by the UK government about its plans to regulate AI. And in that report, it said that this working group that was convened last year has provided a valuable forum for stakeholders to share their views. But it is now clear that the working group will not be able to agree an effective voluntary code. As a result, it was confirmed, ministers in both the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology and the Department for Culture, Media and Sport, but you'll notice that officials at the Intellectual Property Office are no longer involved, so it's back to the ministers in those two departments. And they now, we were told, will lead, are you ready for this, a period of engagement with the AI and rights holder sectors seeking to ensure the workability and effectiveness of an approach that allows the AI and creative sectors to grow together in partnership. What does that mean? Well, it doesn't really mean anything, does it? I mean, that's kind of what the working group was meant to be doing. But don't worry, do not worry, because this government report also confirmed that ministers are still committed to the growth of our world-leading creative industries, and we recognise the importance of ensuring AI development supports rather than undermines human creativity, innovation, and the provision of trustworthy information.
Oh, well, that's all great. And I'm sure everyone is placated by that. In fact, no, they're not, because nobody is. One of the people not placated by that was chair of the Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee in the UK Parliament, Caroline Dynage, who called on the government to urgently reconsider its approach in dealing with the copyright challenges created by generative AI. And she stressed that woolly words from ministers in government reports are no help to creators and copyright owners, including the music industry.
So we wait to see what happens next in the UK. There are fears in the creative industries, including the music industry. You mentioned that Previously, the UK government proposed introducing a specific new data mining exception in copyright law that would have benefited AI companies. There was a huge backlash from the copyright industries, so that plan was abandoned. Then the working group and the code was put in place. Obviously, that's achieved nothing now. There are fears that there might end up being another proposal for a data mining copyright exception, a narrower proposal, so not as bold as the previous one, but any copyright exception will not be welcomed by the copyright industries, including the music industry. So we will see what happens next. I guess because the EU have introduced these new regulations for AI and said some stuff around copyright and transparency, you kind of feel with the way the UK government is these days, because the EU's done it, the UK won't want to do it. So just because those Europeans have done it, we've taken back control. We're not going to introduce these rules. Who knows? We will see. I mean, you know, we should also note that the current UK government looks like it's probably going to collapse into complete and utter oblivion next month anyway. Then we'll have a general election. And then we can start all of this all over again. So there you go. I got us to a happy ending.
Coming up later, the UK's commercial radio sector says that the BBC is looking over its shoulder and copying its work. But before that, some other stories from the music industry this week, starting with Spotify, which released its earnings report for the fourth quarter of 2023 this week. And that showed that the company lost 446 million euros last year. In an earnings call, CEO Daniel Ek criticised Apple's approach to implementing the EU Digital Markets Act and warned that there may be more job cuts coming. Nonetheless, the company has signed a new deal with podcaster Joe Rogan, which is rumoured to be worth around $250 million.
Yeah, I think Spotify have tried to deny that figure, but I think we can be certain he's getting a lot of money,
yeah.
Whatever the deal might do. It's not just Spotify where we're expecting further job cuts. Some downsizing has been confirmed by Warner Music. In a memo to staff this week, CEO Robert Kinkle announced a plan to free up more funds to invest in music and accelerate our growth for the next decade. That plan, he admitted, includes reducing our workforce by approximately 10% or around 600 people, although he did clarify that most of those cutbacks are going to come not in the core labels, but in the sort of the media side of Warner, because Warner bought a few websites and other media businesses in recent years, and in corporate and support functions. So more information expected very soon on what's happening at Warner.
Restructuring is also underway at Universal Music, which also will result in job losses. This week saw one senior executive depart, that being Michelle Jubilier, CEO of the Capital Music Group. As part of this restructure, Universal will have fewer divisions in the US, with the Capital labels now sitting under Interscope, Geffen, A&M, which is headed up by John Janik, and the new CEO of Capital, Tom March, will report to Janik.
Now that Capital's labels are going to be part of Interscope, Geffen, A&M, which is already a ridiculous name for a division of the company.
Interscope, yeah, I didn't know if I needed to explain that Interscope, Geffen, A&M is one thing.
I think that division needs a new name. Maybe we could all have a think of what that new name could be. Intergeff-am it-all. There you go, done it. So that can be the name of this new super division at Universal. Elsewhere, the Financial Times have spoken to a number of independent labels that are critical of the changes being made to Apple Music's payment model so that more money flows to spatial available tracks. We talked about that on a previous edition of Setlist. The indie labels that the FT spoke to said that the changes benefit the majors and will badly impact on the revenues received by labels operating in the indie sector.
And lastly, in this section, Megan Thee Stallion has signed a deal with Warner Music, which will see the major label distribute and support upcoming releases that come out through her Hot Girl Productions company. This follows the settlement of a legal dispute with the rapper's former label 1501 Certified Entertainment last October. And you can read more about all of these stories and everything discussed on this week's episode in the show notes or at completemusicupdate.com. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, the UK's commercial radio sector has hit out of plans by the BBC to launch four new digital radio stations focused on specific genres or decades. The proposed new stations, say Trade Group Radio Centre, simply imitate what commercial radio stations are already doing, and the BBC is attempting to compete directly with commercial radio stations, interfering with the market and failing to provide distinct public value. Media regulator Ofcom, it adds, should reject these proposed market interventions that would just offer duplicate services and not deliver against the BBC's obligations, at the same time as harming commercial innovation. Last time the BBC launched a genre spin-off station, Radio Centre actually took Ofcom to court for not blocking it, so it remains to be seen how the regulator responds this time.
It certainly does, but let's explain to you what it is that the BBC have announced that have got the commercial radio sector so annoyed. So the BBC is going to launch 4 new radio stations on the DAB Plus digital network. And for those of you who don't participate in such things, they will also be available within the BBC Sounds app. Each one is a spin-off from one of the existing radio brands, and the 4 stations together will, the BBC says, build on its commitment to new music and British artists and delve deeper into specific genres and periods of music with context, curation and storytelling done in a way that only the BBC can do. So in terms of what these 4 new stations are going to be, there's a new Radio 1 spin-off, which will be focused on music from the 2000s and the 2010s. There will be a Radio 2 spin-off, playing pop music from the 50s, 60s and the 70s. These are sounding very like the spin-off stations that nearly every commercial radio station now has. It's Absolute, isn't it, who I think has a station for pretty much every decade. And he's probably already got Absolute 30s on the network, just silent at the moment, ready to go when we reach 2030. In addition to that, Radio 3 will have a spin-off which will provide, and I quote, a classical music experience that helps listeners unwind, de-stress, and escape from the pressures of daily life. So I'm guessing that's a slightly more mainstream classical service, kind of in sort of Classic FM, Scala Radio territory. The 4th of these is actually an expansion of an existing spin-off genre service, which is Radio 1 Dance. That is currently only available within BBC Sounds. It will also become a DAB Plus station and will be expanded in some way. These new stations will combine some newly commissioned shows, most of which will be pre-recorded, although they did say there might be some new live shows, but there will also be existing content sort of repurposed for these stations. First of all, some of the on-demand shows that are currently only available within BBC Sounds, they don't air on any of the other BBC stations. If they are genre relevant or decade relevant, they will appear. Plus, the BBC is going to be delving into its massive archive as well. And as a result, because they are sort of repurposing existing content in many ways, the BBC says that this approach with these 4 new stations is a cost-effective way to reach audiences on DAB+, where listening is growing as people move away from old-fashioned FM.
Not only that, but the BBC says these plans are an effort to ensure that it serves all of its audiences and better meets the expectations of listeners. And it says that these stations will give more choice, especially to those who are currently underserved by the BBC and whom Ofcom have challenged the BBC to do more for. So, there you go. Both Radio Centre and the BBC making sure they're putting the pressure on Ofcom there. But Radio Centre says that the audiences being targeted by these new services are already well catered for by commercial radio stations, many of which, as you said, have launched genre or decade-specific spin-offs in recent years. Some commercial radio groups are also using their spin-offs in order to build subscription products within their apps in a bid to diversify their revenues beyond the advertising sales of their FM and DAB services. And BBC bosses, Radio Centre adds, don't seem to acknowledge that this is not what the BBC, with its taxpayer funding, are supposed to be doing. They are required to provide services that are truly additional, distinct and incremental to what is already provided by commercial operators, not duplicate it!
So some pretty bold speaking from Radio Centre on these new services, which, I mean, as you say, the BBC say, we're doing this because that's what Ofcom wants. And the commercial stations are saying this is not what the BBC should be doing, and Ofcom should know that and they should block it. As you alluded to, this is not the first time that we've had Radio Centre, this commercial radio trade group, speaking out about a new BBC service. It was also critical when Radio 1 Dance launched within BBC Sounds back in 2020, and its supporters in Parliament, including Andy Carter MP, who chairs the APPG for commercial radio. There's a all-party parliamentary group for commercial radio, believe it or not. And he questioned at the time whether Ofcom was properly scrutinising the evolution of the BBC Sounds app, basically saying, oh, because they've added this new station, but only within BBC Sounds, Ofcom aren't scrutinising it properly because they're not really paying attention to what's happening with this newfangled app. Of course, this time, these stations are actually going to be available through, okay, albeit digital radio, but through more traditional means than just the app. The criticism of Radio 1 Dance back in 2020 ultimately resulted in legal action, where Radio Centre took the matter to court, arguing that Ofcom had not gone through the proper processes when assessing the BBC's plan for Radio 1 Dance. That all came down to whether or not Radio 1 Dance was strictly a new service, or was it sort of just an extension of Radio 1 within the app? There was a debate about whether or not the launch of Radio 1 Dance constituted a material change to the BBC's output, because if it did, then Ofcom would be obliged to do what's called a public interest test, which could have resulted in the service not being allowed to launch. They didn't do that. The BBC said, oh, it's not a material change to our output because it's just a load of existing shows that are available elsewhere put into this feed in the app. Ultimately, that attempt by Radio Centre to pursue this matter through the courts was unsuccessful, and the courts refused to intervene and interfere. But this is a bigger deal, because these are four radio stations that, as well as being in the app, they are also going to be on DAB. So it'll be interesting to see what approach Ofcom takes. Radio Centre will definitely be monitoring that process very closely. And I suspect, well, I mean, unless Ofcom blocks this plan, Radio Centre are not going to be happy. They're going to be critical. I imagine their supporters in Parliament are going to be speaking out. And who knows, maybe we'll get some more legal action.
But that's all we've got time for on this week's setlist. We'll be back with another episode next week. And you can keep up with all the latest music industry news every day at completemusicupdate.com.